welcome everybody. It's time for another episode of Driven by Design, the only show that shows you the future of automotive design, one conversation at a time, with our driven designer, Brian Thompson. Hey, Brian.
Hello. Ready to do this today.
Yes, sir. So, well, we've been trying to get this one on the books for a while here, so I appreciate we got two great minds together here, two wild topics. Take us there, Brian. Who'd you bring along today to talk with?
We've got David Makin today, and I'm really excited about this because, you know, in this world of automotive design, there's mass production and then there's limited run production, and I love seeing people who create vehicles from scratch that are pure statements. And honestly, I don't know if anybody does it as exciting as well as David Makin does. Let's let him say hello.
Hey guys, how are you guys?
We're good. And this is the star of Toymakers. For those of you who've seen the TV show, like I have, you guys are making some high end toys down there.
Yeah,
you know, we're
really
blessed.
Really great.
You know,
great to have you on here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're truly blessed. I mean, to be able to be surrounded ourselves with the right people and the right tools and be able to do what we do and make a living at it. So,
yeah, you know, and I think that's the dream a lot of people have. You know, when you see your vehicles on television and they're loud and they're big and they're amazing. What I love about them are they have this sort of visceral feeling. And me being on the flip side of automotive design, where I'm creating work that's like in mass production, what I hear more often than not is when I talk about the future of self-driving cars, people will say, well, I like to drive. I love that feeling of the loudness of cars. And so do I. And so that's why I'm glad that people like you are doing what you do, because it's serving the other end of the spectrum. I'd love it if you could just sort of, to kind of kick this off, talk a bit about just what inspired you to create these cars. Like, where do they come from for you?
You know, as a kid, you know, it was always that poster on the wall. Mine happened to be a Lamborghini with Farrah Fawcett in the picture. And when, from my era, that was like the hot car and the hot lady, you know. So, you know, you always wanted that poster on the wall. And, you know, when you're shoveling snow in the winter and mowing grass in the summer, it's sort of out of reach. So, but we were racing cars, racing motorcycles, go-karts at the time. But you develop into a skill set of working on your own stuff and going faster. My grandfather worked for Packard and Studebaker. My dad was a gearhead. He built hot rods. So it was just a very natural fit. I couldn't afford to buy what I wanted. I had to learn how to build what I wanted. And it just sort of grew into a lifestyle of what I did. And then I chose a couple of careers that also picked, like if I needed to build a transmission, you know, I didn't go get a transmission done. I went and got a job at Amco Transmission, learned how to build a transmission. You know, I did that for a summer.
Figured it out.
And if I wanted to paint a car, you know, I went and got a job at a paint shop, learned how to paint a car. And I did that for a couple of years, you know, and you just end up picking a field of work that lives in your world. It was a brilliant life for me. I don't say it was made for everybody, but for me, I've really been very blessed and very fortunate in my life.
Well, and I love that idea that if you want to do something, you go and learn about it. You know, it's really funny, the parallels there, right? So you create hot rods, and you had Farrah Fawcett with her Lamborghini on your childhood bedroom wall. Now, I had Knight Rider and David Hasselhoff on mine. How perfect that I would end up designing self-driving cars. So the cars on my wall didn't exist.
But, you know, you're right, though. That you're a product of what you grew up with. You know, and that, listen, I remember that car very well, and the only difference for me now is I'm in my middle 50s. I love all aspects of cars. I don't care if it's electric. I don't care if it's self-driving. I don't care if it's a flying car. Like them all. And it's learning how to adapt and change with the times and still be current and live up to what I find interesting.
Absolutely.
That's to challenge at best. But I love what I do. So.
And it shows in your work. One of the things I love about your vehicles is, I was saying when we started, but that they're so pure. You know, whether you're doing a motorbike like the Street Digger or even the Beast, you know, it's like, it's very much a beast, you know. I'm curious, Now, so you clearly were so impassioned by the mechanics of vehicles, but when you create a car, you're also creating the styling and the way the car looks and feels, which is a huge element of the design process. Do you do that in-house, or do you bring people on board, or how do you visualize your ideas?
Listen, all this started as a child, and from that poster, mm-hmm. I promise you, I've got a list of about 50 vehicles that I'm going to build in my lifetime. And it mm-hmm. could be a Matchbox car, a Hot Wheels car, could have been a poster. I see most of that stuff isn't drivable when you look at a Hot Wheels car when I was a kid.
Right.
So it's
with the two engines sticking out of the roof that it would be in front of the windshield and stuff like that. You mean our listeners can understand.
Exactly. Yes, like Hot Wheels are... It doesn't make sense. So for me, trying to figure out how to build that in real life and make it is about a line. It is about a stance. I've got three cars sitting in front of me as we speak that have wheels and a body sitting there. And they will sit there for months as I walk by and look at them and tinker with them and move stuff around. It's all about a line. But ultimately, in the end, it's got to be drivable and got to be fast. It doesn't make any good to build a paperweight that just idles mm-hmm. through a parking lot. You know, if it's going to have, you know, my newest car's got 3,000 legitimate horsepower. If I can't go out and drive it and use it, what good is it? So
right. It's just like a steroided bodybuilder who can't actually lift up a bag of groceries at that point. you got to use those muscles.
Right. It is about a line and a body. We do it all right here in house.
Well, you know, I love one of the things you just mentioned as you were talking. I'd really like to call out and dive in a little deeper on it. You said that you'll have a car, body on wheels, sitting in the studio or your shop, and you'll walk by it, and it might sit there for a while, and you might not work on it. Now, one of the things I've often heard, creative people when they're young, they're often told that they have ADD. And I'm very grateful to my mom, who did not believe in ADD. She believed in the creative spirit, being that you work on something for a while, and then when your attention span is off, you let it sit, and then you go back to it. And my mom always taught me, as long as you're actually finishing something, I don't care how you get to the end. You can have whatever process you want, but just finish your project. And I was always very grateful that she didn't put me on some medication, because I was a really creative kid working on a million different things at once. But this thing that I don't think a lot of people understand is that the creative mind isn't linear. And I'd love for you to talk a bit more about the sporadic way you might work on it and live, as you said so beautifully, you'll live with it and look at it as you walk by. Could you dive in and help people understand how that process works sort of in the back burner of your mind?
The big joke in my shop is I go to bed every night with a question, every night, because I'm so tired. I put 12 or 14 hours a day in, and my mind is tired. I don't have the answer. I wake up at 3 a.m. with the answer every night. That's what happens. I start relaxing. I look at my notepad as I sit here at my desk. I look down. I have a little sketch of a vehicle that is in my mind, and I'll look at that sketch and change the sketch periodically over time. You're right. I got a million projects that I'm working on, and it isn't that I don't want to finish them. They're not right in my head yet. I got to truly get it built in my mind. The line's got to be right. I got to walk away. I got to step away, look at other projects, work on other things. Maybe I go to a car show and get an idea. Then I come back, and as I'm walking, I might be walking by out of the bathroom and go, oh, and man, I'll stop everything I'm doing to go back to that project. I think you're right. We didn't have ADD when I was a kid. You know, we didn't have those terms.
I think what it does is it tells people that there's something wrong with them, when in fact it's a very healthy, creative way to be. You know, I think about, like, I love the way you just said that about, like, you know, it might come at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and as a freelance consultant now with a consultant of my own, I don't work in a studio, but when I was at Nissan and I'd be working on a car, you know, the clay model, I'd pull in my Volkswagen Westfalia camper bus at night into the studio and sleep there so that when I woke up in the morning, it would be the first thing I saw. And then, you know, I'll go take a shower in the lockers. But one of the things I miss about that is that when I go visit a client and see the clay model, let's say, you know, the other side of the planet somewhere, I look at it for 2 hours, then I leave. And it's that moment of being around it when you're not thinking about it that I just love. And I was like, I keep telling the clients, let's bring the models over here. We need to live with them. You know, and I think it's that living with it. It seems like you do that so well.
I really do, and even more so is I didn't realize this till I had another. I have a son. He's 14 years old, and a couple years ago he was diagnosed with dyslexia. And when they were doing all that, I realized very quickly that, oh my Lord, I have dyslexia. I had no idea. No idea at all.
You didn't know. Yeah.
I didn't know. But I always came to answers in a non-practical way. Everybody thinks inside the box. I don't believe inside the box. I don't believe it. I believe that there's nothing wrong with people that think inside the box. But anybody can get to an answer. Doesn't matter how you get. I used to get in trouble in school because I got to the answer the wrong way. I believe in thinking outside the box. That's what's innovative. I believe in failure. I believe you have to fail to succeed. I believe you cannot win a race if you don't lose one.
Absolutely.
I believe you have to be an innovator, you have to do things that aren't practical and aren't inside the box. Otherwise,
well, and the box itself. And the box itself is a metal construct, if you really think of it. I was always so grateful
really
for the studio I came up in as a young designer had this policy called freedom to fail. And it was really this. It was as long as you're meeting your deadline, you know, as long as if you have your main project you perform, you can experiment with anything you want. You can make a car out of sticks. You know what I mean? And maybe the bark from the sticks ended up becoming, because what the failure does, let's say failure is a relative term, but let's say you make a car out of sticks, right? And it's obviously not going to be a practical car, but maybe the texture of the bark informs the interior fabric, you know, and you wouldn't have gotten there had you not driven down that cul-de-sac of a car made out of wood, right? You know what I mean?
Totally agree. But that's how I think, though. I totally agree with everything you just said. Most people don't do that, though. You can find success in your failures, even if it tells you what not to do. It's like there is success in failure. I promise you.
So that's a great segue. I'd love for you, because you do have such a bright, shining star of success, and you're on television, and people know you, and they see the successes, right? You know, I assume, you know, the TV show is so well-produced and focuses on the A to B of how these products come to life. Is there a failure that stands out in your mind that you go to when you think of either it makes you laugh or it was something you learned from it? Tell me about a bright, shining failure and what you got out of it.
You know, honestly, for me, it's everything that I do every day. You know, making television, to me, I build cars. You know, we do the OEM cars. You know, you take a Camaro, a Mustang, or whatever you build, and it's simple. It's OEM stuff, and that's easy. Everybody does that. The one-off stuff is what I love to do, where it's a napkin drawing that I've been tinkering with for years. The failure to me is that should be the hard part of what I do. I was mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Thought TV would be easy. I'm just going to go build a car. Walked into television knowing 95% of what was going to happen. All my friends had TV shows, and this is a cakewalk. After, you know, I'm going into year four, I got a second show coming out now, and I realized after 4 years, I know 5%, not 95%. Television's hard.
It is.
You're dealing with that aspect, and it's – hardest thing I've ever done in my life, ever. It's the most rewarding, but it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. So failure is just thinking that I was going to walk in here, build a car, it's going to make a TV show, it's going to be great. I laugh every day about it. I cry. I cringe. I mean, you build a car from scratch. I mean, the chassis, the windows, the body, the seats, the pedals, every inch of the car.
Everything.
And the producer, and you get done, producer throws cameras in it and goes, all right, let's go for a spin. It's like, wait a minute. Can I test
it
first?
Yeah,
of
course.
No, absolutely not.
Schedule.
You first fire up, you pull it out of the shop, and you got cameras. So I'm learning how to drive the car, you know, through twists and turns, you know. On camera. It's like the Beast. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the Beast earlier. 1,200 horsepower, 2,000 pounds, and I'm driving it through the Valley of Death in Vegas. You know, I'm like, my very first test drive, I didn't know if it was going to stay cool. I mean, I knew it would. We got a hell of a team. But
it's that first, and you know, and I get that's why they want to capture, you know, I'm glad you're talking about television because it's such an interesting medium, and because you're telling stories in real time and you're also trying to curate what that story is going to be. I was on a reality TV show myself a few years ago where we had to build cars as well. So I know exactly what you're talking about, where that moment when you're privately creating something and you are testing something out for the first time or it's going wrong. You know, you have these moments of maybe breakdown or you're nervous or you're upset, and it's very private. It's a very private experience. But when you're on camera and the shit's hitting the fan and then things are going, well, that's what they want. That's what they want to tell, right? So, like, it's a very vulnerable place to be. But you do it so well where you allow that vulnerability to be seen, and I think that's why people like you so much, because it makes you real. You know.
Well, I say it's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's the most rewarding, but you got a microphone on and a camera shoved in your face, and you cannot, and you don't know if the car's gonna. I mean, you built the suspension and the A-arms and the spindles and the brake systems. It's like, oh my Lord, you want me to do? And I'm doing 100 miles. Like last year, my season finale car, I'm doing 100 miles an hour backwards. I mean, backwards.
I know.
Spin the car around backwards, and I'm going.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, you know, and the camera guys don't move. It's like, you know, you tell the camera guys, don't move. It's my job not to hit you. You know, it's like,
so it's really your job not to hit them. They will stay there.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my Lord.
Well, I learned some tricks on TV. I did learn if you really get frustrated and you don't want to be on camera. Now, reality show is a little different than yours because it's your show. I was a contestant. But I would learn that if I sang a copyrighted song, the cameras, they couldn't use that footage. If I was really upset, I'd start singing like Rolling Stones or something really expensive, and then they couldn't film me.
That's funny.
I know exactly what you're saying. But it's it's that moment of reality. And actually, I think television is a wonderful medium too. It gets a bad rap, especially some of these build shows, for not being real. But the challenge there is what I found being on the flip side of it, on the inside of it, is that it's a nearly impossible task. People are trying to tell a story in the middle of chaos. And one of the things you do well is, I think the more real you can be, the more you can allow people to see what you're doing, the more of the story they actually get. And I absolutely understand what you're saying about that being a very big challenge, because those very vulnerable moments are right there for everybody to see.
and you got to remember too, you bring up another point, is chaos. You take my season finale car for this year, took me 2 years to build it. I have 40 minutes, is an hour long show, 40 minutes. So you have to build that car on camera in 40 minutes. Plus, you have to tell a story. You got to, why are you building the car? What's the reason for the car? How? So it's amazing. You get 2 years of build. I built every inch of the car. So you can't do it in 40 minutes. So you and tell a story. And so there's a lot of, it's overwhelming at best.
It's overwhelming to produce, and it's overwhelming, and I think on the flip side, it's overwhelming to curate, so that you're really telling the nuggets of the story. And the truth is that you will never tell the whole story, and that's why there's so much good behind-the-scenes footage. But I mean, for a builder such as yourself, I think this is one of the key things people can take away, too, and I'd love you to talk about it, is that, okay, so here you are now. You've created these cars. You know, people know them. They're in people's hearts, especially people that are your diehard fans. But the side of the story that they probably don't see or know as well, let's say if they're sitting at home on a Sunday, you know, watching you or binge watching your show. Talk a bit about before this happened. Like, where were you in your life where you decided, like, did this just fall into your lap? Were you at a kind of a job that you had beforehand that you didn't want to do anymore? Like, talk a bit about that moment of sort of like the early budding of your career where it's full of like energy and it hasn't happened yet. What sort of prompted you to take these risks?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, a lot of my friends were doing TV, or I was involved in some sort of TV show numerous times, whether it was, you know, Jay Leno's show, or, you know, all these guys were doing shows. And, you know, I had, you know, where I was helping with a vehicle doing that show or doing something else behind the scenes, where somebody called me in to be an expert on or do something. But what got me was I was doing a lot of stunt work, you know, for Six Flags, Universal, Amgen, whoever it happened to be for the summer. You know, you're making good money, or you're doing these different things. There's no living there, if that makes any sense. You might work for 6 months, might be off for a year. Or you get old and you don't heal like you used to heal if you got hurt. And everybody kept saying, look, and you're just an actor, you need to do a TV show. I said, I want nothing to do with a TV show. It's fake. I don't want to argue with anybody. Nobody in my shop argues. It isn't what I wanted to do, but I want to build cool stuff, and I want to be able to. I mean, just think about it. I really live the dream. It's hard, but I get to build what I want to build. We're around the people that I love. I love the industry in itself, the people, the products, the future of it, where it's going, where it's been, and that's a passion of mine. So the television show just became a natural progression. As I got older, I could still dabble with what I want to do. I don't have to race anymore. I don't got to get hurt. I don't got to fall off buildings or, you know, fight on camera, if you will, behind the scenes as in the stunt world. I could actually live my dream in front of the camera. It just sort of naturally progressed. I didn't want to. I sort of got talked into it. I had a bunch of producers approaching me going, please do a show. I kept saying no.
Interesting.
One guy finally got to me, and I just said, okay, I'll do it. I don't know why. Outside of the fact
that you were approached to do it. There's one thing I want to put a little pin in so that we don't forget to come back to it, because when you're telling the story here, you talked about the future and the past of the industry being one of your passions. So I'm just giving myself a little reminder that I want to circle back to that. But first, when you're doing, I love what you said about when you're being a stuntman and you're working in television. Mm-hmm. Two things were, you know, first it's hard work. I mean, it goes without saying that stunt work is hard work, but I don't know that everybody really understands exactly what a stuntman does. And you really are putting your body through the ringer, every day. And the idea that you are now surrounded by this world of television, you're doing what you love, you know, building things, and you love doing that. Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting about that people can take away is that you put yourself into a universe where opportunities would come to you versus having to go chase things down, which a lot of people do, and it becomes very elusive if you're chasing things. But the organic way that you put yourself in the world of television and cars it may have happened subconsciously for you, but it was a really great way to build the seeds for this future, which is now your present. And I think that's really beautiful, because now what you've done is, since you sort of planted those seeds or you're in that world, the opportunities came to you. And then eventually, you know, you got, you know, were talked into doing the show, and it turns out you have a great, you know, disposition on camera and such. So it's like, I think people don't realize that they create the universe they live in almost subconsciously. Do you know?
Couldn't agree more, but you bring back something we talked about early on in this conversation. It's getting outside the box. I loved my world, but when you're chasing the job and you're chasing the work and you're chasing the, you know, now it's like I get to build what I want to build, drive what I want to drive. I get to go out and play in anything I want to play in. I just got outside the box instead of me hunting the job. I wanted to create something that would last forever. I could bring my son up into it if that's what he wanted to do. I could create a great avenue for all of my friends and the industry that I love. It would come chase me.
And I love that you mentioned, you know, your son being something that he could now play with, because then you're really talking about not in the esoteric sense, the literal future of the industry you're working in, because he's going to, if he likes and is inspired by your work, he's going to do it in a very different way than you did, right? Because he's Absolutely. Come up in a completely different generation. And I think that is a nice tie-in to creativity in the past and creativity in the future. And as you said earlier on in the conversation, we are always influenced by the world that we grew up in. And so that's why oftentimes I find, having come up in the analog era and then switching into a digital era as soon as I got into the car industry, I see the world very differently in creativity than the kids in college do today. And I love being around them, because I think as a creative person, the last thing you want to do is ever say, well, in my day, we did it this way. Because as soon as you do that, you stepped off the train of creativity and you're just trying to replicate what you did in the past. And so I love to be, I love to meet your son if he's creative and stuff like that. I'd love to hear his ideas on this because this industry is changing. I mean, let me ask you, literally, could you ever imagine a self-driving hot rod? What would that look like? Do you know what I mean? Something
well,
crazy as that.
I think about it every day. It crosses my mind. My son at 9 years old built a real hover skateboard, a real one that worked. My son now at 14 is building his first race car. I mean, he's had junior dragsters, that kind of stuff, but he's actually building a full-size drift car. He wants to go playing with that.
Wow!
My son is absolutely an out-of-the-box kid, and he's brilliant. He's way, way better. And I'm humbled at how he'll go so far past us. And you're right. You don't ever want to say, here's what we did in our day. And people tell me that all the time. And I fight that all the time with myself because I remember when a big black Chevy was a bad boy. Now I call it a flathead. Big block Chevy is just a flathead to me. You know, it's like the technology of today. And you're right. My season finale for season five, we're trying to mix a hot rod with electric with, you know, the self-driving thing, I get. I understand it's coming. There's nothing I can do. I remember when 8-track tapes went away and VHS tapes and I remember the first TV and the. I remember I said, I'd never get a cell phone. Now I can't live without one.
Well, you know, and I wonder, you know, but therein lies, I always think that thing of resistance, that point of resistance, when it catches in our spirit, what's actually happening, if we're resisting, it really means we're holding on to it, right? And so what out of that resistance, out of that holding on to that thing that we don't, are not in line with, therein lies, I think, a moment of creativity. Could you imagine, like, a world where, like, you know, let's say a lot of these self-driving cars I work on, they're spaces where people sit facing each other and there is no steering wheel. But what would be the hot rod equivalent of that space for those people? You know, like,
listen,
you know, imagine, go ahead.
Every day. Well, I think about it every day. You're right. Because for me to survive in my world, I have to be willing to adapt. And I love to adapt because it keeps my mind going. How can I make a self-driving car cool? How can I make an electric car cool? We know they're fast, you know, but what's the allure for somebody my age with a hot rod? It's the sound, it's the stance, it's the look, it's the above. To me, a great sounding radio is a big cam with headers. That's a radio for me.
That's a radio, music.
It's music. That's music to my ears. I don't care about a sound system. My sound system is the headers. So, and a big cam. So when it comes to electric, we know we got horsepower. We know the car is brutally fast, if you want it to be. It's also smooth. It's also it's a brilliant technology. So you can take that. Really cool, like we're talking about taking a 32 low boy, really doing it right, almost, you know, road racing style, big front tires, big rear, making it all. I can give it the stance, give it the look, make it electric. But when you take away the driving aspect, it's a whole other element. Driving today, my 14-year-old, I have a neighbor next door to me, I think he's 20, doesn't have his driver's license yet. That baffles me.
Right. Baffles me, me too. Yeah,
but that's
future.
The kids of today. So how do we make them cool? You know, and that's our job. That's our job to stay relevant is to come up with something cool. And what's a version of a self-driving hot rod? I think I know, but who really knows? It's a matter of watching and learning and listening. And you know, if it's self-driving, does that mean it's going to be electric? Probably. Does that mean it's going to be, you know, I mean, the technology is going to be way off the deep end. But,
individuality
is important.
I'm going to interrupt for one second here. We're going to wrap this segment up here and come back with part two of this right after this. Tell everybody how to get in touch with you, Dave, and more about Toymakers and the new show coming out.
Yeah, you know, we're on all the digital platforms. You know, obviously, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're all over YouTube. We're on thehistory.com. The new digital platform coming out. We have a new show coming out on the digital platforms that we're filming now, which is called The Fast Society, which is a mix between, basically, it's Fast and the Furious, but with real cars, real drivers, real racing. I'm going to live personally in six different worlds of racing, real race cars, real motorcycles that go real fast, And it's going to be fun. So it's you know, right now it's all about digital platforms. So that's where the second show is coming out, and all of the digital platforms, and toy makers will be behind the scenes for that. So,
well, we appreciate you spending time on our digital platform here, and we invite you to stick around because we're going to talk the future here in part two with Dave Ankin from Toy Makers right here on Driven by Design.